This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. We are, you know, we're doing, Matt, previewing all the teams, right? We're on Air Force Falcons today. And we are, what, 80% through? Is that about right?
What's 5 out of 6? It's like 83.3%, if you want to be precise.
Sure, we can be precise.
Two more after this. This is number 10 overall.
10. We are getting close to the season. Fall camps are here. We're talking Air Falcons football. It's great. Football. We're not talking other stuff. We're talking football. And Troy Calhoun, as we like Air Force, is he, if, okay, this is kind of not going off topic, but staying on topic. Is he like the most, out of all the coaches in Mountain West ever, would he be like the most successful, you think? Mostly due to longevity.
Are you talking about the entire history of the conference?
Yeah, he's up there, right?
I mean, I think at this point he has to be, because not only is he like far and away the most, you know, the longest tenured in the conference, I think I'm trying to look this up as we talk. I'm pretty sure he, you know, the only coach in the history of the conference that has more wins than him at this point is Rocky Long.
Yeah, I could see that. I just thought of that for a moment because I'm like, he's been around forever. And,
I think at the rate that he's going, all he needs is another, you know, 7 or 8 wins per year over the next 3 years to match Long and the production that he had. You know, this is, I believe, year 17 for Calhoun. And at least in terms of, I mean, I don't know how you want to say it, maybe like the last decade or so, ever since their last one big down year in 2013. Air Force really has been, you know, maybe outside of like a, you know, a Boise State, for example, one of the more stable models of consistency. And that was no exception last year, which, you know, a 10 win season sounds impressive until you realize that, you know, the Falcons were actually pretty close to true greatness.
Yeah. When you look at who they played, like Commander in Chief Trophy was theirs again. They got stung by, their 3 losses were 1 score less, Wyoming, Utah State, and Boise State, 2 of 3 on the road. Easily beat Baylor in that sub-zero freezing game. Won the rock fight versus San Diego State 13-3. They were close. They were right there.
And they did it in ways that you associate the Falcons with certain things. You know, you associate them with the option-based ground game. But it was really the defense that led the way in pretty much every respect last year. You know, no matter whether you want to look at like traditional metrics or you know, more advanced ones. For example, you know, in terms of SP plus, for example, they were 10th overall in the country. Net points per drive on defense, they were 6th. Available yards percentage per drive allowed, 2nd overall in the country. And I think, you associate them with, you know, certain things. And some of those things were actually very good themselves last year, chiefly among them, Brad Roberts being the nation's leading rusher.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a lot of optimism out there that the Falcons should be very much in the mix, you know, for a bid in this new divisionless Mountain West that we have. You know, they are a pretty trendy pick to finish in the top two and compete for the title. But, you know, the challenge for 2023 is, you know, obviously, you know, like every other team in the conference, they have questions ahead of them. But they're facing such a unique combination of challenges. New quarterback, new leading rusher, whoever that ends up being, whether that's fullback or tailback, you know, replacing, you know, key members of that elite defense from last year at basically all three levels of that defense. So I think there's plenty of room for optimism, but it could just as easily be another very good season with just a little bit left on the table, depending on how well they answer some of these big, you know, challenges that they have coming into 2023.
Yeah, we'll get to the schedule because it's not easy for what they have if you look at the entire totality of especially the second half. But let's just start with quarterback. Ezekiel Daniels is no longer there anymore. So it doesn't, like, I don't say it doesn't matter who their quarterback is, but it can if you want to be, if they want to be really good. Even though people project them to do well, they earn some votes in the preseason top 25. So
people, and they deserve it.
Yeah, they deserve it to be there. But when it's a new quarterback, it's probably, who's it going to be? What, Jensen Jones, probably? I think, possibly. That's potential.
Question mark. Next.
Yeah, Ben Britton.
I mean, nobody really knows yet. Because, you know, even in the depth chart that was released back in July, right around media days, you know, Jones is one candidate who, you know, saw a little bit of playing time over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are two oars, you know, tabbed on that position. So it's either Jones or Ben Britton, the other guy who, you know, saw a handful of snaps as Daniels' backup last year, or Zach Lerier, who, you know, saw a little bit of run himself, was more banged up than the other two. And each of them brings something a little bit different to the table. Obviously, Lerier also doubles as a track athlete for the Falcons. And so, you know, he has that speed element that's, you know, I would imagine very enticing for offensive coordinator Mike Thiessen, as someone who's always looking for, you know, an edge in how that ground game can operate. If you have someone with the capacity to maybe have just a half step on defenders at the line of scrimmage, obviously that's a very enticing quality to have, you know, in this system. But even, you know, Jones and Britton have demonstrated a little bit as a runner and a passer. I think Britton had if I remember correctly, he had one pass attempt last year and it was a touchdown, or maybe that was a couple of years ago. I don't remember exactly.
Hey, regardless,
that's good, correction. Right? He had two pass attempts, but one of them was an 80-yard touchdown.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. So
QB rating, you know, obviously 551.
Yeah, and I think they are probably in a position, which we'll sort of, you know, get into in more detail when we talk about the schedule. But I do think they're in a position where if they want to take, you know, time into the season to really figure out who the guy is going to be, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing if you're looking at their September schedule. But I do think that, you know, to your overall point about, you know, how do you think about replacing a quarterback in this offense? Obviously, the calculus is a little bit different because, you know, you have to account for, you know, the different kinds of decision making that Air Force quarterbacks have to make on a snap by snap basis. And that was something that Daniels was very good at. You know, he was a pretty prolific runner, all things considered, you know, in his career, ended up averaging 5 yards per carry. So that was an element of the offense that it's going to be a pretty high bar for whoever wins this job to try and replicate. Because we know that, you know, when it comes to throwing the ball down the field, obviously they're going to stretch the field. I believe Daniels also had the highest average depth of target of any quarterback in the conference, and it wasn't even close. It was 15.6 yards per target on average. And so, you know, we know that whoever wins the job is going to be responsible for doing that in a number of times per game. But it is going to be that decision-making, which is really hard to quantify, and that ability as a runner, which Daniels, you know, very clearly had and benefited from, same as they did before him with Donald Hammond the third. You know, it's those two things that it's really hard to just look at the numbers and say, okay, well, you can expect this or that or the other thing.
Yeah, because it's super quick. Like, you're right. Like, it's different than a decision to pass to this guy or that guy. You're running for your, I was like thinking of the speed option, running to the side. Okay. Do I take it? Do I pitch it? When do I pitch it? Do I wait till my legs are being, my guy tackles me around the ground, I'm falling, do I toss it? Like, it takes, like, it's very precision based. But then again, it's also okay, kind of you want to suck everybody to you, then get rid of the ball at the very, very, very last second. Yeah. That's what makes the offense good. Like, oh, this guy's running, they'll tackle him by the legs, he's falling, he's going to the ground. They're like, oh, just do a quick toss or do some toss. That's why in defenses can't just suffocate the ball carrier when they go wide, particularly when there's a guy flanking them to get the ball potentially. So that's where he needs to realize, okay, I'll just go down, I'm fine, because that guy's covered, or I will toss the last second. Or one of my favorite plays is shovel pass. If you run, that's why they always run so vertical or so parallel against the offensive line or the line of scrimmage. You can do the shovel pass to the guy on your inside to whoever's at. So it's a lot of thinking all at once, like within half a second. And you're right, like, just because he player backup QB did this doesn't mean they'll do it next year with the full-time reps. So
I think one thing that's going to be very interesting is, you know, for as successful as Zeke Daniels was, you know, one thing that sort of caught my attention in reviewing for this particular podcast is that, at least according to Pro Football Focus, you know, he had a big time throw percentage of 6.6% last year, which actually ranked third among Mountain West quarterbacks with at least 100 attempts. And that sounds good until you realize that the 2 years prior, he had a big time throw rate well above 10%. You know, 2 years ago in 2021, it was actually at 13%. The year before that, it was at 10.5. So it almost makes you wonder whether, you know, the passing game as a whole maybe left a little something in terms of that, you know, 50-50, you know, stretching the field, you know, element that they have. And I think if you're looking for a way to sort of couch it, you know, you realize that his completion percentage, despite the fact that he averaged, you know, over 10 yards an attempt, was actually a shade under 50%, 48.2.
Not great.
I mean, it's probably fine given how infrequently they throw the football. You know, he still only threw the ball like six times a game on average. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, whoever wins that job, like, all it's going to take is one more 20 or 30 yard throw per game to turn that around. But I'm interested to see, you know, if someone emerges who can do that and recapture what they had in between 2020 and 2021.
I think ultimately they'll be fine there, but I think you're right. Like, if they're going to be like, again, if they're going to go to the title game, they have to have some sort of passing game like we've seen. So ultimately they'll be, it's hard with the new quarterback. I'm trying to remember how good like Daniels was or Donald Hammond or even Tim Jefferson when they're the first time starter. But I think with what they run in practice, what these guys, all the reps they get and how the offense is going to be, they'll be ultimately fine, but fine may not be good enough if they want to win a conference title.
Yeah, so it's obviously one of the major narratives anywhere in the Mountain West. But I do think that they are, at least, like, I think it is probably a little bit easier if you just look at the traditional stats for an Air Force quarterback to fight regression than it would if someone, you know, replacing, you know, someone like Jake Haner at Fresno State, for example. Those are very different shoes to fill there.
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine. So running backs, like you mentioned, Brad Roberts gone. 1,700 yards, 17 touchdowns, 345 carries, wild. We assume it'll be John Lee Eldridge who'll be the main guy. Because also, they may not necessarily have a fullback, because Air Force can kind of vary when they have fullbacks, depends. Because that's what Brad Roberts was, they had Jacoby Owens before. Just kind of depends if they're going to have a traditional fullback. They're still going to have all the running backs back there. It just depends if they got a beefy guy taking the lead block or whatever to do the fullback dive. But John Lee Eldridge, over 7.5 yards a carry. Really good. He's going to be their breakout guy. He'd probably lead the team in rushing. One thing, which happened just last week, did you see it with fullback Emmanuel Mitchell's no longer on the program because he didn't get a turn back?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
So that's he would have been their fullback, and he was fine last year. He had, what, 250 yards approximately. So that's kind of a concern that you don't have an experienced player gone, because now that leaves Eldridge as only the top four rushers, only one returns of him, obviously. So that takes away some depth there, or even experienced. But they do have, I guess, Omar Fata could be probably be the next guy in line, the fullback. So they have one back for sure, Matt, which we
know. I believe Fata graduated, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I just checked right here. I can double check. I thought he's Well, look and see real quick. Let me see this on the fly, because I went to let's just click and see if he's still there for us, because it looked like he was. Maybe he did. I apologize. So my website took me to 2023 roster. Never mind. He's no longer there either. So it's even one fewer player they have on the roster. So my mistake on that. For some reason, what I clicked on said he's on the roster for this year. So, but if he's gone, you have, what was it, Burke Owen maybe? Or Owen Burke? I don't know. Jet Harris?
What you have is a legion of potential.
Yeah.
Because that's how it usually is at Air Force. And I think it helps that Eldridge at tailback and as Brigham reported throughout the offseason, you know, in spring practice, they had him in something they called the superback position.
Ooh, I like that.
Which, apparently on occasion it's called superback, but it's actually, spending time at fullback. So that's an interesting wrinkle that, fans might want to keep an eye on, early in the season, what kind of a role they choose to deploy him in. But at the same time, you mentioned Owen Burke as one candidate, and he did have 16 carries last year. He played in 6 overall games. And the one thing to remember about this Falcons team is they tend to find ways to give a ton of guys at least a little bit of opportunity. And that's no less true of the guys who are back for this year. So even if none of them outside of Eldridge the third had a ton of playing time last year, Sione Angelau is there, Burke is there, Aiden Calvert is still there, Jet Harris, Jalen Johnson, any number of those guys could step up. And I think it's important to couch all of this to say that I think the expectation that any one guy is going to replace Roberts is probably asking bit much.
Yeah, that's not going to be the case.
But I do think, alternatively, that it is fair to expect at least a good amount from guys like Burke and Angelau and Harris in particular, two of whom are also listed on that depth chart at the fullback position. So I think it is likely that trio is at least going to get the first crack at replacing Roberts collectively. And so, even if none of them are necessarily the nation's leading rusher, I think in the name of the game, year in and year out, just keep the efficiency train rolling.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, I think to keep that going, it starts with the offensive line where three full-time starters are back, a couple of guys who played a decent amount last year. And I always find it funny. I looked at PFF the other day. Here's the top 10 offensive lines in college football. How is Air Force never in the top 10 preseason? They don't win the gym.
That's an excellent question. Because they are one of the best offensive lines in the country.
Yeah, is it the Jim Moore Award or something? Because Michigan keeps winning that award for some reason.
Joe Moore Award.
Joe Moore, sorry. Like, not to disparage the Wolverines, but I'm saying, like, look how well this Falcons rushing offense does year after year. They need to be better, considered better and more highly. Besides the people who
you're,
know. Like,
you're not wrong, especially last year. You know, by a lot of the traditional metrics, and this is, you know, outside of just averaging 5.3 yards per carry,
which is
know,
good
as a team, that's exactly where you want to be with the Falcons. And at the same token, you know, they also had a stop rate allowed of only 11.3%. That was third in the country. And, you know, all of those, you know, numbers that you would expect them to thrive by, you know, power success rate, you know, so there's their how well they did in short yardage situations, 80.4%. That was ninth in the country, 53.5% opportunity rate. So like those runners, you know, mostly Eldridge and Roberts were getting to the second level. That was 16th in the country. I think if there's one hang up, which sort of caught my attention late in the research that I was doing, they gave up a lot of sacks over the last 2 years, which I didn't realize because I went back and was sort of tried to gauge what their pass protection numbers looked like going back further than just recent history. So like, for example, in 2021, they gave up an 8.9% sack rate. That was 115th in the country. Last year, it was 12.5, which was 129th. But the two or three years before that, the Falcons were basically top 10 in terms of sack rate allowed. And so maybe some of that had to do with Daniels holding the ball a little too long, you know, whatever the case might be. I do think that if you're looking for what separated some of those, you know, really vintage Falcons offensive lines with guys like Parker Ferguson and Nolan Laufenberg and those guys, I do think pass protection is maybe at least a yellow flag that I would imagine the coaching staff is trying to emphasize correcting heading into the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, they had 12 last year, and look at the amount of throws they had. It's about one every seven drop back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 12.5% is one of every eight. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, one of it. Yes. Summer. I was just doing math on my head. I didn't have that. But that's for if you're throwing the ball 40 times, that's miserable. If you're throwing 12 times a game or whatever, eight times a game, that's one a game, which basically what it was last year. I don't know if that's that big a deal. You know what I mean? Like, because. Yes and no. It's, you know what I mean? Because
yes,
it's like,
and yeah. No. I mean, not in the sense that, like, you know, we talked about typical. It, I think, most extensively with like Colorado State, for example.
Yeah, it's different.
You know, their offense was, you know, vastly different. They were counting upon Clay Millen for a lot more, you know, as far as, you know, pushing the ball down the field. But, you know, when Air Force wants to throw, like, they are choosing their spots most of the time, and, you know, very wisely. So it's either that they simply were wasting those opportunities, or alternatively, like when they have to throw to rally to come back from a deficit, you know, they were, you know, cutting their own legs off at the knees in that regard. Yeah, and so I was just going to say that, you know, the fact that they have three new starters back three starters back from last year is definitely a plus, but it also helps that the guys who are likely to take on the starting roles that have been vacated by Everett Smalley, who I do think is maybe going to be a potentially big loss. But at the same token, Adam Karras had 8 starts last year. So, you know, he got plenty of reps. He's probably going to be fine in that role. And then they also have 3 other players. You know, Caleb Holcomb might be the best offensive lineman anywhere in the conference. Mm. You know, last year he had an 87.5 overall PFF grade. That was number one among linemen in the conference. And then also bringing back Thor Pagley along and Wesley Ndago in the interior, you know, that I would imagine is going to bode pretty well for whoever is, you know, manning full back dive from play to play. So I do think they have a lot going for them, especially with the starting experience that they have coming back and being elevated into new roles. But I do think that protecting the quarterback a little more with a little more frequency is going to be one of those, you know, hidden X factors for this team.
Yeah, because think about it. You mentioned what was his 8.15 yards per attempt last year.
Oh yeah.
If you have 9 sacks instead of 12, like half a sack less a game, that's a big difference when all their passing plays are big plays. So it's like the numbers can be deceiving a little bit. Like the numbers aren't wrong when you break it by percentage, but it's also, oh, I'm 100% on fourth down. I went 1 for 1. Cool. Okay, where is that getting you? I know it's an extreme example, or you're 0 for 1 on something. But I do think you're right. When they pick their spots to throw, they want to get a big play. If they can just give up just a couple fewer, like 10 yards per catch per pass completion. So if you have 3 fewer sacks a year, that's 30-something yards. Who knows what that'll be? Could be like a minimum.
Yeah, exactly.
And 10 yards in a game could be a field goal or something. So who knows? But it'll be fine regardless. But yeah, it's one, like, say, yellow flag, minor cleanup area. So wide receiver group, it's always interesting. Just because the top guy may have like 20 catches for like 400 yards or something. And it should be noted, the only position change on coaching staff was wide receivers, where Taylor Stubblefield make his second return to the program. So everything else on the outfit stays the same, which is big. So Thies and obviously OC, all the other coaches are intact. So, and bringing back a guy in Stubblefield who's done it before will just kind of help that cohesiveness a bit, because Troy Calhoun's been there for 17 years, we said earlier. So it's not like it's a surprise, like, oh, what are we running here? Stubbs, Stubblefield, like, what type of route are we doing? My guys are catching how many passes a game or third two? He's familiar with what's going on. And there's always going to be a guy where, like I said, they'll have 20 catches, 400 yards. Like, just looking at last year, leading receiver, if I can pull it up here, I'm having issues at the moment.
Well, they have to replace their two leading receivers.
Yeah.
David Cormier and Amari Terry only combined for roughly 600 yards receiving. But again, you're only talking about 22 combined receptions between them. And most importantly, you're talking about a pair of guys who averaged almost 27 yards a catch last year.
It's pretty good, I think.
Relative to recent history, they've often had one guy who's been able to stretch the field like that, but it hasn't been that often that they've had two guys that could do that. Like, it wasn't like, 2019 level. When they had, Gerard Sanders and Benjamin Waters just going off all year long.
Yeah, that was crazy.
But at the same token, Cormier and Terry very much did their jobs when they had the occasion to do so. And so it's not the most important element to be replaced in this offense. But, if this offense doesn't have it, that has a cascade effect on the efficacy of the ground game. And so they do need to find someone who can do that job. But I would say, just as importantly, obviously in this run heavy offense, you need wide receivers that can block. And the fact that they have Dane Kinnaman coming back from an injury as perhaps the best blocking wide receiver anywhere in the Mountain West, that could be a huge plus for them. And the fact that they were able to break in someone like Caleb Rillos at tight end when Kyle Patterson was hurt last year, he got, a number of starts under his belt. He's got that position pretty much, at least the starting role pretty much sewn up. So then you turn your attention to, okay, well, who's going to be that guy that can average 25 yards a catch? Because, it might be Brendan Engel, who got, I would say, the most run, snaps wise of anybody last year. Only 3 catches for 40 yards, but he was out there. Cade Harris was out there. He had a couple of catches. And other guys might pop into the conversation as well. Kenton and Alexander had some snaps. I believe Wyatt Wilson saw some playing time over the last couple of years. But they're definitely going to need someone to hit in that sort of field stretching role.
Yeah, and we'll just kind of like the backup running back, it's TBD. There'll be somebody. Because historically, they have one guy about 20 yards of play. So it will be.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, too, because, one thing that we haven't really seen that much over the last couple of years is a wide receiver who could run the ball.
Yeah, jet sweep type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, because they haven't really had that since Brandon Lewis left town back in 2020. And so I'm interested if maybe they are working to find someone who can inhabit that role as well. Because I think that if you're looking for ways to sort of, keep this offense iterative, always evolving and trying to stay one step ahead of the competition, if you're not sure what you're going to get at fullback, finding someone who can take that, sort of end around for 10 or 15 yards or something like that could also be very important to their success.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if they mix it up a little bit, why not? Just, they've done it before, and it could be something that's as like an as needed basis.
Yeah, so we'll see.
All right, so what do we say about the defense? Because last year, like you mentioned, their defense is really, really, like really good.
Last year, they were elite.
Elite.
And I wonder how many people noticed.
Not enough, apparently.
And I think the upside, if you're a Falcons fan, is that they've got most of the guys coming back. You know, I believe they have 8 or 9 starters back from a year ago. And, you know, that's despite, you know, losing a couple of players to graduation, losing, you know, in the offseason, some to injury, some to the transfer portal. So they've obviously set a very high bar. But, you know, they have enough coming back that they just might make it again. And I think if you look at the, if you start up front, you know, you recognize that, you know, along the defensive line, the only new player that looks like, or they might be in line for a larger role is someone like PJ Ramsey, who's stepping into one of those defensive end spots, you know, opposite, yeah. Peyton's Droit, who, you know, was another cadet. I would be shocked if we went back a year ago that we mentioned him in this team podcast last year, but, you know, he popped up, he had, you know, 10 tackles for loss, 10 and a half, I believe. He had 10, excuse me. You know, he's back. Jaden Theorgood next to him, you know, 10 games, 7 TFLs and a sack and a half. He was pretty good in his own right. And then they have Bill Richter sort of taking that Vince Sanford role on the outside, you know, as a sort of defensive end slash hybrid, you know, linebacker, whatever you want to call it. You know, he was in the linebacker mix last year. He had 5 and a half TFLs. So there are, you know, some equally, you know, big roles to fill here up front, but they might have the talent to pull that off.
Yeah, like if they, because they also run that 4-2-5 defense a bit, so it's a little different.
Yeah, it's like 4-2-5, 3-3-5, depending on the look from play to play.
Yeah, it's kind of a hybrid type situation. Those looks are always interesting and fun because they're always like, they're just, just different. Like, so they can give you different looks. So maybe, it could be a 4-man front, but only 3 down linemen. Or they can mix it up and do different things. That's always something you could look at to say, okay, who are they playing and what do they want to attack? Like, what's their point of emphasis on this play? So even if they are like legit, they're not going to be top 10 defense again. That seems unlikely. If they drop to top 30 defense, that's still like really, really, really good and probably the best in the conference. And so looking at what they could do up front, got like getting the quarterback in the, like you mentioned, they had what 10, what was it? 10 TFLs last year. I just think them playing as well as it did last year. And it's not just last year, the past couple of years. Cause normally I remember a couple of years ago, who was it? Like they had some really good guys in the secondary, like a couple all American candidates, all first team all Mountain West. It's not just that anymore. They're getting guys up front, which is hard because if you're at the Academy, there's a size, it does the size fit the size to wear the uniform essentially to fit in the box of guys that aren't gigantic. You're like, their nose tackle is not 300 pounds unless somehow they get to Academy and they just grow to 300 pounds because a couple of guys do that. So they overtake with speed. And so that's why I like the if they go 4 down, 3 down, whatever it may be, their speed is what can offset their size, which similar to their offensive line where they're so quick. And that's why the option can go so well because they're a little bit slender. So these defensive ends can just blast off the line and beat the tackle, left, right tackle, whoever it is, or they can get that first step and go up the gap between the center and guard, and they're not fast enough to get them. And that's one big advantage they have to make up for these guys who are big, but not typical FBS big. And that's why I always like about the defense, right? Cause that's always fun to watch. Like these guys look just a touch smaller, but they're so much faster than the lumbering left guard from school X or whatever.
Well, a case in point, you know, if you want an exemplar of that, at least from last year, look at a guy like T.D. Blackman.
Yeah.
Who was maybe underappreciated when he was healthy, and especially last year when he, you know, from the inside linebacker position had 68 total tackles, 9.5 TFLs. That kind of production might be difficult to replace. But again, you know, they have players who've seen, you know, plenty of reps over the last couple of years, who are ready to step up and replace that production, I think, if everything goes their way. So like you look at a guy like Alec Mock, for instance, you know, one fewer tackle, you know, 60, or excuse me, a few fewer tackles, 65 altogether, five TFLs, three pass breakups, and a sack. You know, between him and Jonathan Youngblood and Camby Goff as sort of that roving safety linebacker, I think they call it the spur in their starting lineup. You know, between that trio, like that, you know, they might have a linebacker unit that's as good as anywhere in the conference. And they also have Jaden Goodwin, who also knows how to play that spur position. He had 58 tackles, five pass breakups, and three TFLs last year as well. I think the main concern for the middle of defense is just a lack of proven depth behind that group. So if they do get banged up, we don't necessarily know as much of what we might get from the guys behind them, guys like Elijah Sanders or Osara Ahi and Julian Williams.
Yeah, that's because, and that's what they're going to need, because when we get to their schedule, you'll see why. But every year, late in the year, not a reason they stumble, but again, it goes back to the size thing, the demand on campus, where they just little small injuries can hurt them more than other teams due to depth and size. And so that's, if they can keep those guys as healthy as possible, which health is an issue for every team, potentially good or bad, but Air Force, it could sometimes hit them bigger with guys who are just, it's tougher when you're doing 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., taking a million credit hours and playing football as well and got to stay within the range. Mm-hmm. Again, if they're healthy and good, it's like Mock is amazing. These guys are potentially all conference type players are in that mix to be second team guys. And the defense, again, defense would be great. It's just, it's like most teams. Oh, my number ones are great. Number two, we'll see. Some schools, yes. Some schools, no. But at least Air Force overall has 10 guys who at least started one game on defense last year returning. So it's just keeping those guys healthy in the middle of the field. The light linebacker, again, I guess one thing, Matt, that could help with the depth-wise, if that's any concern, maybe they realize and run the 4-2 more often. Like, they put one less linebacker and put a defensive end or safety or DB on the field instead to kind of help them out. That's one way they could potentially limit any exposure they may have if there's any sort of whether fatigue, injury, or depth issues for talent. So that's kind of a workaround.
And that's why I'm interested in how they choose to deploy Goff and Goodwin in particular. Because on that depth chart, you know, and it was sort of interesting seeing the interplay of last year's, you know, depth chart versus last year's, you know, game-by-game starters. Because if I remember correctly, Goff was always listed as an outside linebacker on the depth chart.
But he never really plays that.
But he was always listed ultimately as a starter at safety.
That's why it's weird.
He plays that sort of crucial role that, you know, the equivalent of the Aztec or the Lobo role.
Yeah, the Rover guy plays either linebacker or DB. So it's like,
yeah, and Goodwin plays that role too. So I'm interested to see whether or not, you know, how much playing time Goodwin gets, you know, to sort of let Goff roam in the defensive backfield, which, you know, if he does, you know, the plus for Air Force is that they might have the best safety tandem. You know what? I'm not gonna couch that. I think they do have the best safety tandem in the Mountain West between he and Trey Taylor, both of whom are very, very good and deserve your attention.
Yeah, they're like the secondary, like I mentioned, like Anthony Wright, the third a couple years ago, they've been getting good DBs the past 4 to 6 years. And that's kind of been stable. It's great.
And one thing that really made them successful last year, even though, you know, they weren't like top of the conference by a lot of traditional metrics. You know, they gave up a 58.4% completion rate. I think that was like fourth or fifth in the conference, if I remember correctly. And 7.1 yards per attempt was closer to the middle than anything.
Yeah.
But they also faced the fewest pass attempts anywhere in the conference. And some of that has to do with the competition that they face, you know, namely Army and Navy, which we'll get to in a moment. So it does skew things just a little bit. But I do think that one wrinkle that could potentially trip them up this year, if they're not careful, is the fact that, you know, while they do have very high quality safeties, cornerback is still something of a mystery, because Michael Mack transferred. He's at Wisconsin now. Ion Castonguay, you know, I believe had a knee injury in spring camp. He's out for the season. And now all of a sudden, you know, the main guy left who had, you know, some starting experience last year is Jamari Bellamy. you know, he played four games when both of those guys were banged up. So it's not like he's coming into that, you know, that position cold, let's say. But they're going to be counting on a lot of new guys who haven't necessarily seen the field a lot to replace them. And I think, you know, according to this depth chart that I'm looking at, Corey Collins and Trey Williams are most likely to get first crack at doing that. So there's going to be one potential hindrance because, you know, both Mac and Castonguay were pretty good, you know, cornerbacks. I believe they combined, I'm trying to remember, I should have written this down, how many pass breakups they combined for last year. But the idea being that, you know, this was a secondary that, you know, didn't necessarily get thrown at a lot. And some of that had to do with the talent. Some of that had to do with the opposition. You know, Mac, for example, had three pass breakups, and I believe Castonguay had three himself. So they, you know, the that duo that's getting replaced had a very active hand in sort of discouraging opposing passing games. So it's going to be on Collins, on Taylor and everybody else in that secondary to sort of uphold that standard collectively.
Ultimately, I think they'll be okay. They will be challenged quite a bit because when we get the schedule, yes, Army, Navy always on this, on the schedule, new FBS teams, Houston State probably won't be too much of a threat, but when they're playing Utah State, San Jose State, CSU, Hawaii, Boise State, a good chunk of the schedule, they'll be tested early and often. They'll have a couple games early on. Utah State will throw nothing more than Hawaii run and shoot, but Cooper Legoth will sling the ball quite a bit. So they'll be challenged in the first month of the season, a couple games here and there. So it's not like some schedules are like, okay, they play a majority of teams that are going to run the ball, not an elite passing, but Hawaii's going to throw a ton. Boise will probably throw a ton. CSU, it's Clay Millen. They'll have plenty of tiny teams that'll throw the ball. So it will be an area to watch. So it just means a front line, whatever needs to get after QB and just kind of disrupt that way. Just make it simple on the DBs and the cornerback specifically. Because safety's great, but cornerbacks, you're that one-on-one coverage. You got to take care of business. And this is where Goff or whomever plays that fifth DB might kind of shadow or shade or zone that maybe one of the corner, if they're not doing man coverage, kind of assist a little bit. Like,
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Just hanging out center field zone coverage. Oh, I'm going to hang out this side. This is the best receiver to help out a little bit here or there. And he'll be in a position where, oh, they're not passing. Okay. Follow the ball and tackle. If not, they're going to assist in a cornerback defense. So I think it'll be the way they've been doing the past couple of years. They'll be okay. Because if you have strong, great safety, he's like, okay, cornerbacks could be an issue, but it's still overall the secondary is going to be above average. It's just new cornerbacks. There's a concern there potentially.
I guess we'll see.
We will see. So what do you got about? But what do we have for special teams for the Falcons? And they do play altitude. Does that help their kicker a lot? Because I've heard if you're higher, the ball floats a bit more easier.
Well, you know, Matthew Dayport, you was 16 of 21 on field goal attempts last year. Did have three kicks of over 50 yards, so you might be onto something there.
I could be. He's been
He's been pretty solid. Like he's been the kicker. I think this is his third year holding down that position, and there's really no reason to think that, you know, maybe he's not as prolific as like a Jonah Dalmas or a Jack Browning or something like that. But he's very much a credit to what this offense needs from him. And I think that's also true of Carson Bay, who, you know, this is, obviously Air Force isn't an offense that's often inclined to, you know, punt any more than is absolutely necessary. He only had 31 punts last year. And so even though he only averaged 37.6 yards per punt, probably not necessarily a bad thing because the Falcons are usually more inclined to just push the envelope, challenge on fourth downs if the odds look correct.
Yeah, it's like fourth and four, and they're at the 40-yard line. They're going for it.
Yeah, exactly.
They punt when needed. So you're right, when it's 37 yards per punt, it could be, okay, we're at midfield and it's fourth and seven, and we're not going to risk that. And then a 37-yard punt pins them inside the 15. So, all right, ready for schedule time?
Let's do it.
Let's open up with the FCS Minimat. Robert Morris, I have a question. This game's at home. Why is it kicking off at 11 a.m. local time? Do you have any clue? It's kind of weird.
You know, I'm almost certain that the season opener in Colorado Springs usually is a daytime kickoff.
No, but 11 a.m. local is kind of weird.
Well, you know, you got you're gonna get up bright and early anyway if you're out there at the academy, right?
I guess so. Even on Saturdays, you get up early. I don't know. Don't they get to sleep in?
I mean, if you're at the academy, if you're in Colorado Springs, you might, by the time 11 a.m. rolls around, you've probably been up for like 5 or 6 hours anyway.
You already had lunch and you're working on your second snack of the day.
There you go.
So this game's also an altitude of people are wondering. It's got picked up locally in addition to the Mountain West Network if you're outside of the footprint. So I'm not sure in my neck of the woods if it's a TV game or streaming, but for you, Matt, you're definitely streaming. But
for sure.
So what does Robert Morris bring to the table here for the FCS team coming to town?
So for being brutally honest, the answer is not much.
That's what I like to hear. Dominant victory game one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that should be the expectation because you're talking about a Colonials team that was 0-11 last year.
Oh,
opened the year with a pair of one score losses to Dayton and Delaware State. But, the major problem that they faced was, in terms of overall SP plus among FCS teams, they finished 128th overall, only scored 20 points in two games all season long.
This is going to be a long day.
Yeah, which is a shame because they do have some. I was going to say they do have some nice pieces on defense. They have a pair of linebackers, Joe Casale and Tony Brown. Both of whom are, at least for the Big South, all conference caliber type athletes. Casale in particular was maybe the best overall defender on this team last year. Mm-hmm. 69 total tackles, 11 tackles for loss.
Epic.
But, this is also a team that, still has to settle what they're going to do at quarterback. And they were not particularly good at throwing the football last year. Only completed 49.4% of their passes. But unlike Air Force, averaged under 5 yards an attempt. So you are absolutely right.
Six players
right.
To a pass. Six players.
It's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be a very lovely day in Colorado Springs for a huge Falcons romp in week one.
I want to bring this up real quick. They were sacked 36 times last year.
Yeah.
It's about three.
Not great.
So no. And about almost 18 interceptions. So they're going to win easily. Then they play Sam Houston State. Did you notice where this game is being played?
Is it in Huntsville now? I thought it was in Huntsville. Or is it in Houston again?
It's still... Okay, let me check the Air Force website. Looking at FB schedule, it has it at NRG Stadium, home of the Houston Texans.
I was getting conflicting information about that all offseason long.
We were. I thought we settled this. So I'm going to the Air Force official website. You go to Sam Houston State and we figure this out here. But I think it could be right. It could be in Huntsville where they have the giant. No, because we talked about it. Because they have the giant statue of Sam Houston, which is abnormally tall for some reason.
No, apparently it is in Houston. Go figure.
Oh, it is. Okay. It is at NRG Stadium. Okay. Well, there you go. It's on CBS Sports Network. So, hey, I'll tell my brother to go to that game because he lives in Houston still. So, go check out the Falcons and Bearcats. So, for those who are unfamiliar, this is not an FCS minute because Sam Houston State is no longer in the FCS. They are now first-year Conference USA team. And the most familiarity from people in the conference, who was it Bob DeBow, who's a former head coach, came to Mexico to run the unique run option style under Bob Davey. That was quite successful until it wasn't. And they've typically been a pretty good FCS team, like going to the playoffs, deep run, scoring lots of points. But they weren't quite that good last year. So this will be another big transition for them going up against, obviously, Air Force team that's going to run for like 1,000 yards, it seems like.
Yeah, they're definitely coming to the FBS ranks at a very interesting time because, as you may recall, it was only 2 years ago when the FCS played their spring season that this same team won the national title.
Mm-hmm.
And even the year after that, they went 11-1 in 2021, but fell off. We're only 5-4 last year. Some of that had to do with some defections. Some of that had to do with transitioning to FBS, which if memory serves meant that I remember reading this correctly, and there's probably listeners out there who could correct me, but they were ineligible for the postseason last year because they were transitioning to FBS. And so even heading into last year, there were some championship contributors who had moved on because of that impending move. And so they're moving to CUSA, and they do have quite a bit back even despite being right around 500 last year. The major question is, how prolific are they going to be on the ground? Because this is not a particularly strong passing team. They do have both of their quarterbacks last year who who threw at least 50 passes, including their leading passer, Keegan Shoemaker. Only completed 46.6% of his throws, 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. But that's not really the strength of where this offense wants to be. It wants to be on the ground. And in that way, you know, you have Shoemaker who, you know, only 250 yards, but he averaged over 5 yards a carry. That'll play. Same with Zach Herbacek, you know, 495 rushing yards, but 5.8 yards per carry. That'll play too. I think the major question for them is, you know, how are they going to adjust on defense in particular to, you know, not only offenses like Air Force, but, you know, now all of a sudden you're going into a conference that's going to have, like, you know, Western Kentucky that knows how to score points. You know, Middle Tennessee Coastal. Can put up points every so often. Yeah, Coastal. Even teams like UTEP and Middle Liberty. Tennessee often have a little bit of juice. So, which is not to say that they don't have, you know, players who could step up. You know, they do bring back both their leading tackler from a year ago, including linebacker Kaven Gathan, 79 tackles, 9 TFLs, and 3 sacks. But again, I think given, you know, Air Force's track record, given, you know, I think their talent on paper, I would expect them to go on the road and win this one.
I do as well. The quarterback situation is also not great either. I do think, you mentioned defense may not be great. They gave up fewer than 20 points in their last handful of games. So it gets FCS competition. So defense could provide some resistance. But I still think Air Force should win by a couple touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Then here's where the schedule gets weird. Like, we'll get overall, but they play Utah State the following game on a Friday night. So they had to travel back home, play in a short week after playing a night game, and then they play back-to-back Friday night games. So they'd have a weird schedule because they're obviously Commander-in-Chiefs. Their next month is conference games from Friday, September 15th, Friday, September 22nd. They get an extra day to take care of to play San Diego State. Then they get a Wyoming after a bye week. Utah State's going to be an interesting game because it'll be a real test of an actual FBS team that's been around with a good quarterback in Cooper Laga. But Utah State has their own issues with million transfers going to the Big 12 to a lot to BYU. It's at home, which is good. I'm trying to think what happened last year's game. I'm trying to recall. What was the situation last year's game? Wasn't it something? It was the one of the few losses. That's right, 34-27, which was weird because remember how bad Utah State was last year?
Utah State's kind of had their number over the last couple of years.
They do, but how inconsistent they were last year. Not great. They have, because I'm not sure how many they won, but last year it was the running game. And Cooper Laga is getting started again this year because he played last year and had 200 yards in the win. Having the better quarterback, Cooper Laga, obviously, of the two teams. The running attack loses Calvin Tyler Jr., which we talked about. They lose a couple of receivers. So Utah State wasn't projected to be very high. I think they're losing too many offensive weapons to keep pace.
It was really, you know, last year's result in particular was one of the few times that Air Force really got beat pretty handily on the ground. You know, between Tyler Jr. and Laga, you know, I think they combined for roughly 180, 190 yards rushing. And, you know, I think the thing with Utah State is, like, you know, even Blake Anderson came out and said himself, like, they're sort of the great unknown with so much turnover on their roster. But, you know, Laga is still there. And, you know, they have a track record of at least developing a little bit of talent on offense. I mean, I don't know. It's sort of hard to predict. Like, Utah State is so hard to predict.
Yeah.
And I had this pegged as a Utah State victory when we talked about it originally.
Interesting. You changing?
I never change. And I think the challenge for Air Force in this game, and I do think it may be for, you know, their greater challenge in particular, is how well are they going to hold up against strong defenses in this conference? Because I do think that, you know, Utah State at least has the potential to be a pretty solid defense, you know, across the board. You know, they've got guys in the front six, like MJ Tafisi, Max Alford, you know, on the back end, they got like guys like Ike Larson, who know how to step up and play the run. So I do think that, you know, matchup wise, you know, as unlikely as it may seem on paper, you know, I think their early schedule might be particularly tough because that's where most of the strong defenses are on the schedule. Because I think, you know, you might not see San Jose State either as one of the better defenses in the conference, but they were last year. And even despite the fact that they're replacing Cade Hall and Billy Amifahoko on the defensive line, they should be better overall behind them at linebacker and in the secondary, even if they're having to replace a lot of production up front. You know, when it comes to San Diego State and Wyoming, even despite the fact they get both of those games at home, you kind of know what to expect, you know, performance-wise out of both the Aztecs and the Cowboys. So for as promising as I think their non-conference schedule looks offhand, you know, for the first half of that conference schedule, I have them going only 1-3.
Really? What? Conference schedule, you said, right?
Yeah, Utah State, San Jose State, San Diego State, Wyoming. I only have them beating the Aztecs.
That's it? On the opposite, I have them 3-1 and losing to San Diego State.
Interesting.
I'm not a fan of my San Diego State loss. I'll be like you and not change. But I think they'll be Utah State because I think Utah State lost too much. San Jose State, actually, I'm wondering, let me see what I put there. Apologies. I made a mistake there. My San Jose State is lost. I was looking at it incorrectly. So I'm like, wait, why would I have that? Why did I have that as a loss? I like San Jose State and like what they're doing. So I was double checking my full roster of games in front of me for, because I want to match up, obviously, because wins and losses are equal. So I do have them, 2-2. I do have them beating Wyoming, which I think that'll be one of the most low key, not for us, but if people are looking nationally for a game, like that could be a really good game. I think people want to watch because it's typically lower scoring, which contrary to people's belief, Matt, on Twitter and otherwise, I do like some defensive football, but also give me a couple touchdowns here and there to mix in. I think that's only fair, but I think that could be pretty good. Probably the defenses for Wyoming, but I think they can pull it off because it's home. The Aztec game, after thinking about it, I probably should change it, but keep it as a loss because maybe Jalen Maiden will get a big game and they'll figure things out for 1 week. But I have them going 2-2 in that stretch before they go to the second half of the schedule, which features only one true home game, which is ridiculous. Not good. Who made their schedule?
Well, that's okay because you know they're going to get up for those rivalry games in October.
Yeah, they got Navy on the road. CSU on the road, so it's an in-state game. Army in Mile High Denver, so kind of home game, not really a big travel rival. So those three games, like that's a very important stretch if they're going to be like really good this year, I think, for what they can be. So when they go to Navy, we don't expect from Navy. Run the ball, not much pass, fullback dive. They're not, people say, oh, they're the same. They're not, because Navy actually has a fullback dive or Air Force. It could depend. Air Force will be in shotgun more often. Air Force will actually have two receivers and do a few different things, where Navy's just, let's do the bunch formation and try to get yards up the middle a lot of the time. Them and Army kind of.
Yeah, but you know what, though? It's a brave new world in Annapolis without Ken Niumatalolo.
That's true. New head coach. He got taken out. Who is their head coach? I don't have the left hand.
Who took that would be Brian Newberry, who was previously the defensive coordinator.
That's right. I knew they promoted from within. So it's a smart move because they run the triple, and what else are they going to do? They're not going to change that. So we know they're going to run that type of offense. And their defense was – well, they had who's the guy in the – no, that's the Army guy. Sorry, I think of the guy with the NFL. They don't return John Marshall, do they? Isn't he moving?
No, he finally graduated.
That's what I thought. I'm like, dude, he had like 12 sacks last year. He's a player. But having a defensive coach is unique for Navy because – do you think it'll change much? Because the offense will be the same. Like, is it going to be more conservative? Like, they don't throw much as it is. They threw 126 times last year.
Well, I mean, if the offense is the same, I think that bodes well for Air Force's chances in this game because the offense last year was not particularly good.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure
out here. But it is fair to say that maybe they were a little bit unlucky last year because losing by 7 at home to Delaware to open the season, not a great look. But I believe that was one of five one-score losses that they had, including this matchup last year with Air Force. They lost by 3 to the Falcons. They lost by 6 on the road to SMU. Lost by 3 at home to Notre Dame. Lost by 3 in the rivalry to Army. So, you know, they do have, three of their four leading rushers back from last year, including their fullback, Dabo Fofana, who had over 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. But, you know, they're probably breaking in a new quarterback, even though both of last year's main starters, Xavier Arline and Ty Lavatai, are back. They might be turning over the keys to someone new, Tedros Gleaton, who, you know, played pretty well out of spring ball. But it really might be Newberry's background as a defensive coordinator that makes the difference in how much the middies can bounce back this year. Because you mentioned Marshall. Marshall is gone, but they do bring back their linebacker, Colin Ramos, who had 79 tackles and 4 sacks last year. They also bring back free safety Rayon Lane, who had 71 tackles and 4 pass breakups. You know, they got guys like Jacob Busick, Clay Cromwell up front. So, like, they've got a lot of experience back on both sides of the ball. And, you know, we could talk about, like, series history. We could talk about numbers all we want. But, you know, everybody who's watched this game closely over the years knows that you can sort of throw a lot of that out because it's going to be a slobber knocker one way or the other.
Yeah.
But if I'm a Falcons fan, you know, looking at their roster, looking at Navy's roster this year, I'm expecting the Falcons to come out on top in another defensive fist fight. So I had this one as an Air Force win.
I do as well. I think they'll beat Army in the same fashion because it's kind of at home. Wasn't this game played at the Texas Rangers Stadium last year for some reason?
Yes.
Wow. It's just always hilarious. But it's at Denver, so it's not really a road game. It's like half an hour down the road there. But we look at the Black Knights, so there's no different. And we'll get to the other game I skipped over here, so we'll keep up the rivals here. We know what to expect from them, like similar things. Running the ball, run option. They do quarterback draw, like quarterback sneak, fullback dive, a lot of those type of things. So it's not going to be anything they're missing or what anything different. They're mirror teams. They hate each other. It all comes down to, can they stop the dink fullback dive? Can they stop Tyson Riley, who was okay last year?
Well, can I add something there?
What'd I miss?
Well, in terms of the Army's offense, it's not actually business as usual.
What are they doing? What did I miss here? What did I forget in my research?
They're overhauling the offense is what they're doing.
Oh, I missed him. That's a big miss. Apologies. What are they doing there? They're going run and shoot now?
Not quite. You know, the way that Phil Steele described it is, you know, shotgun zone read offense.
So they pulled the New Mexico from under Bob Davey, maybe.
Something like that. So they brought in a new offensive coordinator, Drew Thatcher, to be able to do that. Came in from the Division II ranks, you know, coached at Nebraska Kearney. Had a player of the year last year who combined for 2,500 total yards of offense in 11 games. Averaged 33 points a game, over 400 yards per game. They scored 80% of the time in the red zone. So, like, he's got a little bit of a track record behind him. And, you know, like Navy, Army also has a ton of experience coming back. But it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how those pieces who, you know, were pretty, you know, they weren't quite as efficient as Air Force was, but they weren't, you know, necessarily bad per se. You know, so you mentioned, you know, Jacoby Buchanan, Tyrell Robinson, you know, Tyson Riley, all, you know, they have a lot of production from their running backs back for 2023, but it's going to be really interesting to see sort of how they deploy all those guys, because I don't think it's likely that as many players are going to get as many touches as we've been accustomed to seeing. And they're also bringing in a new quarterback, probably.
Probably.
With the, I think all three of the players who threw at least, you know, 10, 20 passes for them having graduated from last year.
So definitely a new quarterback.
Yeah. And they also have to replace a number of players on defense as well. I think the big name that they have to replace is Andre Carter, you know, who's, you know, trying to establish an NFL career for himself. But, you know, like the midshipmen, they also have, you know, some talent back. You know, Leo Lowen anchored in the middle. He had 100 tackles last year. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, one of the questions that we got from our followers was, do I think that Air Force is going to win the Commander-in-Chief's trophy? My answer is yes. I think they're going to beat both Navy and Army again this year.
I do too, because with Army, if they're making the offensive switch you mentioned, how smart are they going to do? Are they going to go full-on Rich Rod at Michigan? Where they like, we're doing our off my offense no matter what, who we have, or Brady Hoke at San Diego State twice, where slowly transition into use what we had before to slowly get to what I want in a couple of years. So if they go full on what the vision is or what the new coordinator from Nebraska Kearney can do or wants to do, that might be a problem. But I suspect them still run a lot and be somewhat familiar to last year, but probably throw a little bit more. If they stick to what they kind of do what they do best and slowly integrate the offense, it'll be better. But if they don't, it'll be a blowout. And regardless, Air Force is winning. So,
oh, I would, you know what though? I would caution against saying it's going to be a blowout because much like the game with Navy, it's almost never a blowout.
I want a blowout, so I'm wishing for a blowout this year. Blowout in this game.
That's fair.
It's 17 points. Is that okay for
blowout? And I will add. I will add that the last five games between the Air Force and Army have been decided by 7 points or fewer.
So I'm wrong. That's okay. Let's move on.
We'll see. You may not be. You know, okay. To that point, the previous like nine games or something like that before were all decided by at least 14 points, or excuse me, 10 points. So you may be onto something.
It swings back and forth. Okay. Let's go back to the College State game. We go to the CSU game. This will be Clay Millen throwing the ball, Norvell trying to get the, Have we named the offense out in Fort Collins? This is like Fort Air Raid, or what are they calling it there? I forget. Is there a name for it yet?
That's what they were calling it last year. I don't know if they've updated the name or not.
Let's work on that, folks. Let's find out what it is. But this will be against, a little contrasting style. It is on the road. I like Norvell. At this point, the reason I'm struggling to choose this game is because it's the same part, the part of the season where they should know who they are after week eight or not. And for how much we think CSU could be pretty good, maybe make a bowl game, I just don't think they can handle this talent, just what they're going to be facing on the ground attack. And if we mentioned how good the secondary is for Air Force, the safeties at least, that'll pose a threat to Torrey Horton potentially. But I just don't think CSU can get it done. I don't trust them enough to be the team that's Air Force has been good forever. CSU is not. And that I think that's a real thing when you talk about confidence and who can win. And if you're a team that always wins, not necessarily against your opponent, but we talk about Calhoun's like, 10 wins is great. Maybe 11, we could be better. For what they do, I trust a more experienced coach and the more experienced offense, which is going to be Air Force and John Lee Eldridge running the ball all over.
Well, I mean, I personally think this stretch is the most likely stretch where Air Force's strength on defense is going to be most evident. You know, considering the questions that I personally still have about the Rams offensive line.
Definitely.
You know, that I think is going to be a major factor in that game. That's sort of what I'm projecting, which is why I think Air Force is going to win that game. But I do think it's also true of the two games after that at Hawaii, home versus UNLV. I do think Air Force is going to win both of those as well.
I do as well. Even though traveling to Hawaii is tough, Hawaii just, they're not there yet. And we already talked about them last year. The run and shoot offense, that might actually play in the Air Force hand with all the good players having secondary, despite the quarterback speed. And as we mentioned, TBD kind of for success-wise. But if they have 3 to 4 guys back there who are really good, that can mitigate that. They do have the quarterback situation. Ray Braden Traeger could have a big game against them. But I just think time and possession will just kind of kill them because Hawaii's defense, not very good.
Work in progress.
Yeah, it's a work in progress under Timmy Chang. And so that's when UNLV, they're at home, that's going to be a win. Even though how much we both really like Doug Brumfield and what we think that Brendan Marion can do offensively, UNLV's just, they're not going to be able to compete with this team. And we talked about the Rebels in our show, so check that out for more details on why. But again, trust is a big thing for me when your team's good and disciplined as Air Force is, they're going to win. But the final game of the year at Boise State, it'll be close, but I don't think they're going to get it done. This game's typically reasonably close throughout the past 5 or so years, but Boise's been on the winning end more often than not.
Yeah, the Air Force won this game 2 years ago, and you could make a case they let it slip away from him last year.
Yeah, they're all, like I said, yeah, they're all, well, I forget what exactly happened last year. I know it was close. I'm trying to recall. Can't think of the top of my head of what it was. Well,
if memory serves, Boise just rallied late and then they were able to make a defensive stand to, you know, keep Air Force from driving down the field. And I think they stopped him like right outside the red zone on the final drive, if memory serves. It was Ezekiel Noah pass breakup.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yes, okay. But yeah, but this game will be close. And I think what'll come against them is because I mentioned the road, the only home game they have is UNLV. So they'll be traveling every week, and including that one, the final week. Boise has Utah State the week before. They're traveling from Logan, whatever. It's just a 1 week road game, not a big deal. But for what we think Boise can be, who's getting the most points in the coach's poll at the moment, preseason wise, the better quarterback they'll have, the better running back duo, overall talent wise, Boise is going to trump Air Force. I just think it'll be similar to what's been past. It'll be a game where, oh, it's kind of close to halftime, and then Boise will pull away a little bit, something along those lines, where it might be a 30-20 game, but Boise will kind of get something at the end, because that's how these games have kind of gone the past couple of years.
You know what? It wouldn't shock me if it was low scoring in the same way that it was last year, you know, because it was one of the few times that Boise State really got stymied on the ground after making that switch that they did to Taylen Green. So yeah, on paper, obviously the quarterback situation for the Broncos is much more settled, and their ground game with George Helani and Ashton Jeanty, much more settled. But the Falcons put the clamps on those. You know, Helani didn't play in this game last year. That's important to remember. Mm-hmm. But they put the clamps on Green, and for the most part, at least as a runner, and on Jeanty as well.
Yeah, if they do that.
So I do think it's more of a strength on strength scenario than anything. But I am sort of with you in taking the long view that, you know, given the questions that the Falcons have at quarterback, and given what we've seen from Taylen Green, I think it's definitely going to be competitive yet again. But I do have Boise State winning that one as well.
Yeah, I think they'll win as well. Being at home is a big deal as well, so that's a consideration to look at. So.
Yeah,
that puts me with Air Force at 9-3 overall, with three conference losses.
Yeah, I have them at 8-4 and 4-4 overall in conference.
Interesting, but most people have them second place, which seems like we may not be turning that direction for them.
I mean, not me personally, and I think part of it is hedging. You know, obviously the quarterback fullback dynamic gets most of the attention, and rightfully so. But to me, you know, if you had asked me this question back in like February, I probably wouldn't have had a problem putting them a little bit closer to the top of the standings. To me, I think the major difference is that they've slowly trickled out just a little bit of talent at a time here and there on defense. Mm-hmm. So there's just enough graduations, just enough departures of other kinds that I don't think it's a lock that they're going to be as good on that side of the ball again in 2023. And if they fall off just a little bit against, you know, some of the offenses that they have on their, you know, on their schedule and in conference play in particular, that's one avenue that could keep them, you know, just outside, you know, looking in yet again. But it could just as easily be that they resolve all their problems, and with a relatively comfortable schedule, that they, you know, that they roll, they win through 10 games, then they, you know, either travel to or even host a conference championship game. So I do expect them to be in the mix. I might just be hedging a little bit because I'm a little more uncertain about the defense in particular than I was earlier in the offseason.
Yeah, if I'm going to look, I agree, because my losses, San Jose State, San Diego State, they could easily win those, I think. When you mentioned hedge on defense, I think offense, that could be the same thing as well, where there could be some inconsistency with the new quarterback and depth at running back not there. Mm-hmm. So that could be something, like we mentioned earlier, like, oh, the little when to toss, when to pitch, when to keep, those type of things could come into play, yeah. And those lead to fumbles. Those could lead to inexperience of knowing when to get rid of the ball or when to keep it. So that's where I think they will have a hiccup here and there because of that inexperience, but still 9-3. And I'm looking at my record wise overall. them sitting at with three conference losses could get them into the title game for my projections.
We shall see.
We will see. So this wraps up our Air Force preview. Check us out, MWR.com. All of our podcast previews, where if some news pop up, it's watch list season. We're getting those out there as well. And we now have, Matt, two more previews to go before we're into our giant preview week zero stuff and football's here. Actual games in a couple weeks. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back to preview the next team. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't know it offhand, but we have Fresno and Nevada next, so it's one of those two.